the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Well, there's all kinds of advice that is given for retirement, how much you need to save, an amount you need to reach, and when you need to retire. We're going to explore those possibilities. Some are realities and some are myths. Joining me on the program is Dr. Lawrence Kotlikoff. He's the William Warren Fairfield Professor at Boston University. Professor, I want to talk about two common recommendations made to people that are saving for retirement. One of them used in the industry is you need to replace about 70% of your income. And the other one is the 4% retirement spend down rule, where you spend down 4% of your assets. Let's take each one of those and let's explore, do they really apply to today's market, which is so much different when many of these rules were espoused in the early 90s?
Yeah, neither of these rules of thumb are really, I think, useful because everybody's situation is so different. So what might be the right ratio of spending to pre-retirement income for one household could be dramatically different than for another. So saying that everybody should target to spend 70 or 85% or somewhere in between of their retirement, well, should they be spending it every year? What if they've got kids who are going to be leaving the household after they retire? So while the kids are still home, they have to spend more. Or what if they have a big mortgage they have to pay off? Well, again, they have to pay more when the mortgage is being paid off. So the whole idea of a ratio that spending is somehow going to be fixed for sure in retirement, and that you can therefore apply a fixed ratio of spending to pre-retirement income and say, this is what I need to target for, is off base. And then the other big problem with this is that leads you to say, well, look, in order to make that target, the target could be wrong, but even so, to make that target, I have to save this much this year, and therefore I should be saving this much every year in the future. It kind of naturally leads, that's in the software that's out there and the way the financial planners are interacting with people, it's telling them to save the same amount every year. So if you're 45, you're being told to save the same amount, no matter whether you have to put your kids through college that year or 5 years from now, whether you get an inheritance, you should save exactly the same amount. That's not the way things work. What happens is that people keep their spending fixed, not their saving fixed, and they adjust their saving so that they can keep their spending fixed. So the idea of putting your saving on autopilot means you're making your consumption wiggle all over the place, move all over the place. And that's the opposite of what people want. They don't want their living standard to be high this year and low next year, and then low again the following year, even lower. They want to have a smooth ride. And that's the whole idea why we're saving to begin with. We're saving for retirement so that we don't have our living standard drop to nothing so that we're impoverished, right? So this whole idea, this whole methodology has no real fundamental basis. It's real rubbish is the way I described it in the column I did for two articles. One was in Seeking Alpha and the same column I put up in Forbes. And if you go to Kotlikoff.net, the column is there. And then I did another column about the 4% rule being rubbish as well.
You know, I never did understand, Professor, if let's say I'm spending, I don't know, let's just take a figure, $5,000 a month to live, depending on where you live, and all of a sudden I retire, why my living expenses would be 70% of what they used to be when I was working. I mean, if I retire, I don't have to pay the 7.65% Social Security tax, so there's less income out of my paycheck. But getting to a 70% rule never made much sense to me. Let's talk about that 4% rule for a minute, because when it was first brought up in the 90s, that was back in the day, as you know, Professor, you could get 7 to 8% on treasuries. Corporate bond yields were in the same range, if not a little more. Certainly 4% in a world that was paying 7 to 8% was easy. It's not as easy spending that kind of drawdown in a world where treasuries are 3% or less.
Right. That's another stupid rule. We don't need to use stupid rules or high school algebra to figure out our finances anymore. We have much more sophisticated software out there. As you know, I've developed through my company a program called Maxify Planner, which is at maxify.com. So it's M-A-X-I-F-I.com, which It doesn't ask you to tell us to give the software a target. It doesn't give you any rules of thumb to obey. It figures out what you should spend every year so that you can keep on spending it. And it adjusts for it. When we say, when we talk about spending in the software, we're talking about your discretionary spending, what your real living standard's about, not about things that you have to spend money on, like your taxes or your mortgage, or when you're working your work expenses, which then drop after retirement. So all those things are entered into the program, but then the program realizes, well, gee, they're off the top fixed expenses. And what I'm interested in, the program want to do is give the people in the household a path of discretionary spending that will maintain their living standard per person through time. So it solves the whole problem of how much you should spend every year. It does lifetime budgeting for you. Here's how much you should spend this year, next year, and the year after, in addition to your fixed expenses that you have to spend. It's also how much you should save. Here's how much life insurance is needed so survivors have the exact same living standard to the dollar. So all this stuff is interconnected. And, you know, I'm an economist. We've been working on this problem for actually 100 years. And we developed the mathematics and the computer algorithms to do this. Our software has got a patent for the algorithm. It's it's a form of dynamic programming where three different, very complicated programs are talking to each other. And the level of sophistication of our software is light years, many, many light years beyond any other financial planning tool on the planet. So there's a lot of tools that are a lot slicker and cost a lot more money, but none of them can do the basic calculation of telling you how much can you spend such that you can keep on spending it. That sounds like it might be an easy calculation, but when you're calculating everybody's future taxes for the rest of their life, federal and state, taking into account Medicare Part B, figuring out their Social Security benefits exactly, and when they should take what, all the complications of the tax code, like the taxation of Social Security benefits, the Medicare Part B premiums, all these things that are connected, and deductibility, mortgage interest, and getting inflation right, that takes years of effort. And our company has been around for 25 years, and I've spent 20 solid years. It took us 5 years just to get a prototype, you know, improving the software with my colleagues. So this is not child's play. And so I'm not trying just to hawk my software. I don't make any money for my company. I'm a CEO of a little company, president of a company where I earn nothing, because I'm more interested in hiring people, paying American workers, tech workers, and also helping the public. And I get paid okay from Boston University. I'm just not that greedy. So I'm pushing the software because I'm trying to get across to your listeners that this is something that really helped them. We just had an article written about us in the New York Times on Sunday, and we just sold in the last 2 days more software, last 3 days, more software in 3 days than we would sell in an entire month, just because the word is starting to spread. You can spend thousands of dollars with a financial planner. They will not be able to figure this out. And of course, we do have a version for financial planners to use with their clients. And I'm hoping a lot of financial planners will eventually, you know, use it with their clients. But the main thing is that economics has something to offer here. And the financial industry has to kind of come up to speed at long last.
I want to move on to something that plays a very important role for many Americans, full retirement age, and the implications of that.
All the language in Social Security is a little misleading because it suggests that that's the age at which you should retire or take your benefit. But right now, that full retirement age is 62 in a couple of months for people who are, 66 in a couple of months for people that are 66 in a couple of months, they're at full retirement age. But if you wait till 70, your benefit will be higher, be 8% higher for every year that you wait. And compared to taking your benefit at 62, your benefit at 70 is 75% higher, adjusted for inflation. So taking your benefit at 62, that's called an early benefit reduction. You're taking it at your full retirement age or your normal retirement age, that's going up to 67 for people that were born after 1960. They'll all be facing an age 67 full retirement age. But then everybody can wait till 70 and get a much higher number. It'll be 3 years times 8%, 24% higher if you take it at 70 versus age 67. So These are the ages that they reference. And then for different types of benefits, waiting beyond your full retirement age isn't necessarily going to lead to higher benefits in the future. What I was just talking about was retirement benefits, but for spousal benefits, for example, they peak when you hit full retirement age. For widow's benefits, they may peak when you hit full retirement age, or they may peak before that if your deceased spouse or deceased ex-spouse, because you can get divorcee spousal benefits, divorcee's widower benefits and widow benefits. If your ex-spouse took his or her benefit, retirement benefit, before full retirement age, there's a very special benefit formula that comes into play for you when it comes to you're collecting your widower benefit. So your benefit may actually peak a couple years before full retirement age. That's why using really smart software is so important, because if you look at the Social Security website, you'll learn none of this stuff. You'll get the idea that your benefit is going to peak at full retirement age, your widow's benefit, not the case. You also might be led to take both your widow's benefit and your retirement benefit at the same time, maybe at age 62, when you can file for both of them. You only get the larger of the two. But for a lot of people, doing that can cost them potentially tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I can get into the details of that if you're interested. But the Social Security system is set up to, it's so complicated that you can easily lose tons of money if you make the wrong decision. And the people at Social Security are not knowledgeable enough to guide you. They don't have the software that I'm talking about, this Maxify.com software. We also have a tool called MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com. You need a really sophisticated software tool to figure this out, because the system has hundreds of thousands of rules, and the people working at Social Security are not super well trained. They're not super well educated in general. They're underpaid. They're overworked. And they're going to tell you the wrong thing at least half the time, or they'll give you some misleading information. So that's the reality. We have to get Social Security straight when it comes to retiring, because it's too important not to.
Professor, I want to talk about some of the mistakes that people make, as this article alluded to. A lot of times people will take their Social Security benefits at age 62, which is a reduction. They get about 75% of what they would get at full retirement age. But a lot of times they do that because they see somewhere life expectancy tables. And let's say life expectancy table is 74 or 76 for a male and maybe longer for a woman. So they see 74 or 76, and then they think, oh, if I take it at 62 versus 66, I'm going to get it 4 more years. Let's talk about the fallacy of that kind of thinking.
The Social Security is helping you make the wrong move here, because if you go to their website, they discuss your life expectancy, which is not really valid or relevant in this context, because what you really need to worry about is the worst case scenario. Just like when you buy a house, you worry about your house burning down, you buy insurance against that happening. The worst case scenario is the thing you keep in mind. You buy full coverage. You buy full coverage for having a big cancer, expensive cancer operation. Automobile coverage, you take a full collision coverage, because you only have one life, one house that you can lose, one life, one car that you own, one body to try and protect. You can't pool risk over many houses. If you owned 1,000 houses, you could just self-insure. On average, some will burn down, but most won't. But for us individually, we are going to die only at one date, which is possibly at our maximum age of life, which for most people is probably 100. My mom just passed away in 98. My sister and brother didn't think she was going to live beyond 92. So you want to insure yourself against this financially devastating problem, which is that you continue to live. That's the real risk of living, of old age. It's not dying, it's living. Because as long as you live, you have to keep paying the bills for yourself. And Social Security is providing you insurance against living a really long time. It's doing it in two ways. One is that it pays you benefits no matter how long you live. You keep living, it keeps paying you. So the longer you live, the more they shell out. It's just like, if I have this, the bigger my house fire, the more they shell out. And then the other way it provides insurance is it lets you, by delaying taking your Social Security benefits, lets you get a much higher number. So that's in effect paying premium for going benefits for up to 8 years between 62 and 70 to get a 75% or 76% higher number thereafter is paying a premium in the form of foregoing 8 years of lower benefits and getting higher insurance, which is the stream of income that will keep paying year after year, the longer as you keep living. So you want to take advantage of Social Security's insurance. You want to maximize it because it's the only really safe way to insure against your living longer than you expect. And having Social Security focus your attention on your dying on time at your life expectancy is truly criminal. The people running Social Security going back decades should really, they should have been fired. And the people running Social Security right now should be fired, because every day that they're not fired, they're leaving on their website information that's misleading. And I've been writing about this for years. It's like imagine you had a homeowner's insurance company putting statements on the front page of its website. Don't buy homeowner's insurance because on average, your house won't burn down. The person running that company would be fired the next minute, right? If they put that up, if they got this revelation, well, gee, the typical customer here, they're not going to collect on this policy. They're going to pay more on average in the policy than they recover. On average, their house won't burn down. And we should be telling them the truth, which is that they shouldn't buy homeowner's insurance. Well, that person would get fired because that's a ridiculous perspective, because people cannot play the averages. They don't have 100,000 homes to pull risk over. They just have one house. This is, again, where economics matters. You can have 1,000 financial planners and you could show them all the Social Security website. And you can ask them, are these statements about life expectancy? Do you see anything wrong with that? Those statements. Not a single one of them will say that this is criminal. Not a single one of them will be pulling his hair out over what's on that website. Every economist you put in front of that website will scream bloody murder. That's the difference in trading. We know how to think about insurance. Somebody who's a financial planner who isn't necessarily taught about the economics of insurance, they just don't get the basics of it. They treat it as a financial instrument as opposed to a risk reduction instrument. And risk is a whole lot different from investing. Risk mitigation is a very different thing than how you diversify your portfolio.
Professor, as you've been dealing with retirement issues over the years, what would you say would be one of the most important things to begin doing? Let's take somebody that is maybe 10 years, 15 years away from retirement. What should they be doing now to prepare for that eventual date?
Well, they should figure out, first of all, how to not retire, because retirement is very risky. That we could find, scientists could find a cure for cancer and other ailments, and we could live to 150. So you want to keep working, because every year you keep working is a year less that you have to use up your savings to, a year shorter retirement that you have to fund. That's rule number one. Rule number two is you have to have a plan for how much you should be spending and saving and not be overspending. And that you can get that plan by running maxifyplanner.com very quickly. And then rule three is you need to make sure you're maximizing your tax savings through using retirement accounts, either a 401k type account or a regular traditional IRA or a Roth 401k or Roth IRA, depending on what is going to produce a higher path of spending. And again, the software I'm talking about figures that out for you. Then the figuring out when you're going to take Social Security and what benefits to take first and what benefits to take second, extremely important for maximizing your lifetime spending capacity, what state you're going to live in, how much you're going to downsize your home, when you're going to start downsizing your home. All these things can be figured out literally in a matter of seconds, because every time you, in our software, you set up a base case and you say, well, let me retire in 5 years later. Bingo. You see, gee, that means I get to spend this much more now and through the rest of my life. So retiring early really cost me. Or I'm going to retire in Texas where there's no state income tax. Bingo. I have a higher living standard. I think that's worth doing. I'm going to take Social Security at 70 rather than 68. Bingo. My living standard is higher. So this is like a money machine without any risk, because moving to Texas does not involve risk. Working longer doesn't involve risk. I mean, you may not physically be able to do with this. So there is some risk associated with that. But apart from that, if you have the option of keeping on working, then there's no risk. Taking Social Security benefits at these benefits at these dates rather than some other way, at some other dates, there's no risk. So this is a dream come true for people in finance. They can't get you a higher safe return than about 1%. This is a way of getting in performing money magic on your own right in front of your laptop.
As we close, if our listeners would like to find out more about the software that your company provides, tell them how they could do so, please.
Well, the program I've been talking about is called Maxify Planner, maxify.com, maxify.com. It does the Social Security calculations for you to figure out what's the best timing for taking your Social Security. But then that's a $99 program. We have another program for $40 called maximizemysocialsecurity.com, maximizemysocialsecurity.com. And that just focuses on how to get the highest lifetime Social Security benefits. And then there's a third program we just put out about a year ago called AnalyzeMyDivorceSettlement.com. You know, we have about 4,000 people getting divorced every day, about 10,000 baby boomers retiring. And this program helps both spouses see what happens to their sustainable living standard if they get divorced based on the settlement that one of the two spouses is proposing. So this is a way to come up with a fair divorce settlement, not involve the lawyers until you want them to write up the agreement and get to like a win-win situation and not go to divorce war and not make yourselves crazy fighting each other and make your kids really upset seeing you fighting. We put the software together to really help people not go down that path, because I've seen so many of my friends get into a bloody war with each other and spend all this money with lawyers. You enter the settlement, how you're going to divide the assets and what alimony and child support. And it so shows side by side, well, he gets to spend this every year for the rest of his life. She gets to spend this. Are the numbers the same? Should they be the same? You get to look at that. You get to see exactly how you're being treated and how you're treating the other person in what you're proposing. So analyze my divorce settlement, maxify.com, and maximizemysocialsecurity.com. All these programs can be of great help to you or to your friends or family members. So thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome, Professor. Please come back and talk to us again. Well, that concludes my interview with Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff. He's spent a lifetime as an economist studying retirement planning and especially important issues as Social Security. As we began that conversation, we talked about two myths or widely used maxims when it comes to retirement planning, the 70% replacement rule or the 4% spend down rule. Both of them don't work in the real world. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.